So let's just get into it. So like I said in the intro, this episode, we're going to be talking about the Confederate flag and monument. So on both Twitter and Instagram, I posted a question asking if the Confederate flag was racist, because I wanted to gauge what the general consensus was, or maybe that's the wrong term for it. I wanted to see where everyone was based on party, based on knowledge, things like that. And what I found, there's a few of you that there was, normally I'm not going to ask loaded questions, but this one was definitely loaded because there's actually a right and wrong answer to this. And so I wanted to see where people are at, but what I found was interesting is there were liberals that also got this wrong. So we had a lot of people, you know, most of them saying, yes, it's racist. And a lot of liberals were saying, well, maybe it didn't used to be, but now it has become a racist symbol. And even you have Joe Rogan, who so many times on his podcast, I feel like he's trying to get that middle ground by saying like, well, it didn't used to be, but now it's changed to that. So that's why it's wrong. And I'm sorry to you liberals out there, and I'm sorry to Joe Rogan out there, but you're all wrong. So this specific Confederate flag is specifically racist. So, but just don't, please don't dump out on me yet. Please stick around because we're actually going to be talking about this. I want to give you the proper context. So we're not going to talk about the Civil War. That can potentially be a topic for another day. Because it's such a big one. So we're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the actual Confederate flags. I'm actually going to be almost like super specific on this flag versus others. So, you know, we hear people, and we'll talk about monuments in a little bit, but we hear people talking, you know, oh, you're trying to erase history or heritage, things like that, that they're mad about the Confederate flag being challenged and being banned at like NASCAR and the military taking it down in certain institutions and military facilities. And then when it comes to the monuments, people say, well, you're erasing history. And we're going to talk about that. We're going to get into it. So first off, Civil War, 1861 to 1865, 4-year war, North versus the South. I think most people know this, but I do have listeners in other countries. I've learned through through research and the stats, so I don't know what all you know, but from 1861 to 1865, there was a Civil War where it was 13, it ended up being, it kind of grew as it went on, ended up being 13 states that joined the Confederacy for this war against the North. They tried to secede, meaning they wanted to be their own country. They wanted to leave the United States. Once again, we can talk about the whys and the crazy misconceptions and the revisionist history that's happening with that. And I'll touch on it, but I think that's such a bigger topic. I want to kind of stay laser focused on what we're talking about here. So let's get into it. So before we talk about the Confederate flag that I'd say 99% of you know about, we got to really dial back and we have to be very specific because, you know, like I said before, words matter. Words are significant. But also, with this being the podcast that humanizes people, we gotta get past the noise and just, we need to be talking on a level playing field and we don't really have that. So what I want to do is I want to explain the difference between this Confederate flag and previous ones, because you see, during the Confederacy, during the Civil War, there were three different designs for the Confederate flag, none of which is the battle flag that we have today. There's variations, don't get me wrong, but this specific flag that we have is not the flag that flew or was agreed upon as for the entire Confederacy during the Civil War. So let's get specific on those flags, because this is really important. Context matters. So there were three. So the first one was referred to as the Stars and Bars, and that was used from 1861 to 1863. Now that one, it kind of looked like the American flag, which is part of the problem. Spoiler alert, there were three stripes. The top left corner had the blue rectangle that actually had a circle of it changed as more states joined the Confederacy, but it ended up being 13 stars, and there were three stripes, the red and white stripes, like the American flag. So that was the first one, and that's known as the Stars and Bars. Now, it was criticized on the ideological grounds that it resembled the U.S. flag, the flag that the North flew, or the Yankee flag, as they would refer to it. So Confederates disliked it because they saw it as, like, symbolic of a centralized federal power that they were trying to get away from. They were trying to secede and get away from it, and they were worried it was a little bit too on the nose. So the second flag was the Stainless Banner, and that was used from 1963 to 1965. Now remember, 1965 is when the war ended, so we'll get to that, I promise. So the Savannah Morning News editor, William Tappan Thompson, published an editorial championing a design featuring the battle flag on a white background he referred to later as the white man's flag. Let that sink in. This was referred to as the white man's flag. And what it was the battle flag in the top left corner where the stars are on our flag and where they were on the first Confederate flag. But it's the battle flag and the rest of the flag was white. So, because he's like, hey, we're fighting for white people. So this is the white man's flag. So he said, and this is his quote, "As a people, we are fighting to maintain the heaven-ordained supremacy of the white man over the inferior or colored race. A white flag would thus be emblematic of our cause." So, you know, I told you we're not going to be talking about the Civil War and really diving deep, but it's pretty damning when your second flag, the reasoning behind the design, is to represent the white man. And this guy's arguing why this should be the flag and what it's about and how it is about race. And people ended up loving it. So the initial reaction was favorable, but then they kind of saw one of the problems with it. They thought it was too white. It looked too much like a flag of surrender, you know, or truce. And especially if it's like on a naval ship and kind of gets caught up in the wind and everything, it's really easy to be confused there. So they worried that it would have a mixed message. So now we're going to the third design. It was the Blood-Stained Banner. And that was used and changed in 1865, right before the Confederacy was defeated. So, in fact, it was March when it came out. So that flag looks like similar to the white man's flag, the second design that has the battle flag at the very top corner of the left and the white flag, but there's like a red streak to it. So, you know, they wanted it to have a redesign that looked as little as possible towards the Yankee blue. They wanted to get rid of that completely. Now, it was passed to change it to this third design in 1965, but unfortunately, it was the end of the war, so most of the soldiers never got a chance to even see this flag. You know, it didn't come out. Manufacturing wasn't that fast like it is today. So most Confederates never actually saw this flag before the Confederacy was finally defeated. So there you go. Those are the three designs of the Confederate flag during the war. Not the one that we see today. So hopefully, at least with that, we're on the same page that this specific flag we refer to as a Confederate flag was not flown during the war. It's really important that we have, whenever you have a discussion with people on a hot button topic, for progress to happen, you need to find some middle ground. So hopefully, or common ground, I should say. Hopefully this gives us the common ground to then move forward and discuss this specific flag, which is what we're going to do now. Once again, not going to totally get into the Civil War. You know, there's little things about it, and there's so many amazing books on the Civil War and what happened with the South and how they revised the history to make it not seem as bad and make it focus more on states' rights and not so much about slavery. And I could suggest some that are amazing, but honestly, if you want a quick read about how the South was able to revise their history to make them seem less bad, and the North kind of initially allowed it out of reconciliation and wanting to mend fences, the only book you really need to read is the children's book, If You Give a Mouse a Cookie, because that's basically how Southern historians were able to take the ball and run and change a lot of stuff that we deal with today. Once again, that might be a topic for another day. But let's look at this flag. Now that we've established that, hopefully we're on common ground to then move forward. So this flag, like I said, never part of the war. This flag is known as like the flag of the battle flag of the Army of Northern Virginia. So here's the deal, though. This is why everyone's getting it wrong. This specific flag was a racist retort to the federal government. And we're going to really dive deep into that because that's a super bold statement. I get it, but it's factually accurate that it's not even an opinion. Once again, if you haven't listened to episode 0, definitely go back and listen to that so you can kind of see where I'm coming from. Long story short, I'm an independent. I'm not a liberal. I'm not a conservative. I just look at the facts and use critical thinking. So already I've had episodes where each side probably is not a huge fan of specific episodes. Anywho, I'm just going on the facts, that specific facts. So this flag began as a response to the civil rights movement and the passage of federal civil laws in the 1950s and 60s. Because you see, a lot of stuff was happening around this time, and we're going to kind of get into that. So a lot of things were put in place that were symbols of the Confederacy as a response to equality and as a response for support or just not oppressing black people. So, and this is one of them. So this one, this specific flag that we see all over the place was used by Senator Strom Thurmond's Dixiecrat political party in 1948. So they opposed civil rights. In case you don't know about them, I want to give context. They opposed civil rights, racial integration, and they wanted to retain Jim Crow laws. So they were segregationalist. And they used the symbols, since both they and the Confederates had similar goals. That was opposition to efforts to quote-unquote change the South's racial status quo. So that's what the Dixiecrats were about, is making sure whites were still top dog. That's what they were about. And so they put up this flag as an FU to the federal government for desegregating, for requiring that. Now, once again, let's do some context here. So what are Jim Crow laws? So they were state and local laws that enforce racial segregation in the southern United States. They were put in like the late 19th to early 20th century by white Southern Democrat-dominated state legislation to disenfranchise and remove political and economic gains made by black people during the Reconstruction period. So yes, Democrats, they were pushing this. They were all about that shit. But however, the Republican Party, Lily White Movement, also supported the exclusion of African Americans. And what's shocking is we talk about Jim Crow laws like they were the beginning of the 1900s, but they were in place until 1965. So, and once again, the 50s and 60s are going to be coming into play here, so stay with it. So, yeah, so this is specifically put up as a response to equality. It just is. I mean, the end. You know, I'm going to keep going here, obviously, but cut and dried, this is what it's about. And it gets worse. It doesn't get better, guys. So During the memoriam period that ran from the late 19th century through the 1920s, the use of this flag grew, and they became symbolic embodiment of the lost cause. So that's what this popularity with the flag is about. Now, what's the lost cause? It's ideology saying that slavery was just and moral because the enslaved were happy, even grateful, and slavery brought economic prosperity. So far we have these flags going up into state buildings as a defiance to desegregation, saying, well, I know we legally have to do it, but we don't like it, and we're going to show you that we still believe in segregation. And it was also spread throughout the South because of the lost cause, which is the ideology that white people should have slaves and that it's just. Once again, this isn't getting any better. And in like Mississippi, Florida, Alabama, the state flags were adopted around the same time with new Jim Crow segregation laws being put into place. So with Jim Crow laws, like, they specifically were trying to not only keep segregation going on, but also strip rights through legal means from black people. So they combine them with like poll taxes, literacy tests, and just extrajudicial violence like lynching. Like, that was okay if there was just cause under these laws. And definitely it impacted and disenfranchised and excluded black people from voting for like 90 years. It's nuts. So once again, the end. Flags, these flags that we know as the Confederate flags, were specifically put into place due to racism. Being for it, guys. Like, specifically putting it in defiance with tolerance. Defiance against equality. Things like that. Like, it's cut and dry. So now let's go on to monuments. So we've discussed flags. I mean, if you disagree at this point, feel free to leave a comment. It's really going to be hard for you to argue against historical facts, but knock yourself out, I guess. But let's move on to monuments, because it's a little bit more complicated than that. There's obviously connections to all of this, but it's a little bit more complicated because a lot have come down and a lot still are being requested to come down, and there's a lot of pushback to that. So let's kind of dig into that. So let's just get a misconception out of the way right away. So the overwhelming majority of Confederate memorials weren't even erected in the years directly following the Civil War. Most were put up like decades later. And they weren't built just to commemorate like fallen soldiers, generals, people like that. They were installed as symbols of white supremacy during periods of U.S. history when black African Americans were trying to get civil rights, and Confederate states, former Confederate states, I should say at this point, they weren't happy about it. And so they put these up very symbolically. So in total, we're talking like over 800 monuments have been constructed over the U.S. That's nuts. That's insane. Like, for something that lasted 4 years, we have over 800. It's very purposeful. Now, the biggest spike, once again, remember, they were not erected right after the Civil War. The biggest spike in Confederate memorials came during the early 1900s. Does that sound familiar to you guys in the timeline? Well, it should, because that's when Jim Crow laws were enacted and put into place and really enforced. So around this time, remember there's 800 total from when the Civil War ended to now. There's been 800 that have been put up. Some have come down, but once again, 800 were put up. So in just this time, in the early 1900s, over 400 monuments, half of all monuments, were put up during Jim Crow laws. Once again, that's crazy. So in this effort, and we're going to talk about specific monuments here in a bit. They were spearheaded mostly by the United Daughters of the Confederacy. Remember that, because those ladies, that organization's going to be coming up here again. So it wasn't just Confederate monuments either. So they also rejected any textbook that said slavery was a central cause of the Civil War. They praised the KKK, and they gave speeches that distorted the cruelty of American slavery and defended slave owners. Because once again, this is all part of the lost cause. Saying that the war was just, that slaves were happy, that black people are supposed to be enslaved, that white people are supposed to be superior. This is who and what they were. So from around 1920 to like the 40s, I'd say, there was a second wave of statue building. That was the second round. And this period is that, man, this would be the happiest of coincidence if the fact that they just did this increase in these monuments also had to do with black people fighting for civil rights and pushing against all those lynchings that we talked about that Jim Crow law legally allowed. At some point, we probably should talk about what citizens' arrest was founded on. That's pretty dark and bleak history. But I digress. So that was another huge wave. And once again, it's crazy timing that all of a sudden the South is super motivated to put up these monuments right after black people are really trying their hardest to just be treated as equals and not be judged by their skin tone they didn't choose at birth. Now, a significant portion of those monuments were erected on courtyard grounds, which is huge. So a lot of them were specifically put there. Now think about that. So black people are getting civil rights. They are being allowed, they have legal rights. So they're being allowed to potentially take things to court, whether they're being harassed, whatever. So why would the courthouses be the place that these monuments would be put up? It seems very purposeful. Definitely with black people getting legal rights, it definitely feels like they wanted to use that as this symbol to black people of the struggle and subjugation they would fight or they would face in their fight for civil rights and equal protection. So they want to say, yeah, you know, maybe on paper you have this, but we still own the law. Tell me, honestly, tell me I'm wrong. Tell me why, if that's not accurate, tell me why they would choose courthouses to be the place where they put up a ton during this time. Man, I have looked at it from every angle and I have done research, and man, the crazy consensus is that it was done as a silent threat. It's tough. Like I said, I try and give so much benefit of the doubt, but the connections aren't great, guys. If you're claiming that Confederate statues and monuments and flags aren't racist, connections don't look good, guys. So now, not just statues even were erected during this time. So there was a case, Brown versus Board of Education in 1954, that said maintaining segregated schools was unconstitutional. So after that happened, once again, another crazy coincidence, but there was a huge uptick in the number of schools and colleges that were renamed after Confederate figures. A lot. From 1954 to 1970, at least 45 were named after Confederates. And now, as of now, we're up to 200 schools that have been named after Confederate figures. Some have been changed, sure, like I think like 30 or something like that. I mean, might even be at the 200. That might even be since they renamed some of them. But man, that's nuts. Robert E. Lee has a bunch of schools named after him, as well as Jefferson Davis. We'll get back to that cat here shortly, so brace yourself for that. So speaking of revisionist, this is as a Reconstruction nerd and Confederate history nerd, this is probably my favorite story. So, and this is how the revisionist stuff happens, and this is why these monuments are not about preserving history. Remember that if you give a mouse a cookie story, yeah, this is where they just took the ball and ran. So let's talk about Kentucky. Can we please talk about Kentucky? I want to talk about Kentucky. So Kentucky was a border state during the American Civil War. It was neutral. It did not want to be a part of it. It did not want to take a statewide stance. But at the beginning of the war, the Confederate Army tried to take over. They tried to take it for the Confederacy. And so Kentucky said, "Hey, the Union, can you help us out?" So the Union came down and pushed out the Confederate Army, and then it became a Union state, or at least, under Union control around 1862. So about a year into the war. In fact, Kentucky, at the end of it all, Kentucky produced more Union soldiers than Confederate soldiers. We're talking 125,000 Union soldiers compared to 35,000 Confederate soldiers of men who decided to go to those sides. However, so by 1997, 61 properties or monuments and statues have been put up for the Civil War, and the vast majority, like almost all of these monuments, are Confederate monuments. For a state that not only started neutral, they didn't want to take a stance, but also when the Confederacy tried to come and take the state, they asked the Union to come and help, and then ended up being under Union protection slash control for the rest of the Civil War. But then, freaking abracadabra, all of a sudden, the majority of the statues in Kentucky are Confederate statues. Once again, not put up until decades after the war's done. But if you go to Kentucky and see all this stuff, what are you gonna think? You're gonna think that was a Confederate state. You're gonna think that's what it was about, especially if you see the numbers. It's a very understandable assumption. It's incorrect, but that's what they're going for. So let's talk about nowadays. Let's kind of, already we're kind of talking a lot of stuff, a lot of information. So let's fast forward to now. So in 2020, 168 Confederate symbols were removed around the US. Almost all of them after the killing of George Floyd by the police officers. I think only one of them was done right beforehand. Now, 94 of the Confederate symbols removed were monuments, compared to 54 monuments removed between 2015 and 2019. So there's still 2,100 Confederate symbols around the US, and 704 of them are monuments. So there's still a lot, guys. If you still have this thing where you want to see all the Confederate symbols and monuments and statues, better get on it. But there's plenty for you to see. So even if you miss some and some get taken down, you're probably gonna still see a bunch for the rest of your life. So, I hear the argument all the time, even by people where I'm kind of surprised that's their argument, is that removing monuments remove history. And is it like, I hope by now the people who still are sticking with me in this and who haven't been offended by me having the nerve to give facts and provide proper history. For all of you who are still listening, I hope we all can agree that it's not, that there's revisionist history that's not, that does not pertain to our country. But in case you're still on the fence, and in case me just giving you numbers and information on when the majority of the monuments went up, let's look at a few examples of ones that came down in 2020, and you can decide for yourself if your anger about them coming down is justified. So let's look at the Jefferson Davis Monument. The pedestal's still there, but whatever. It's the monument's gone. It was in Virginia, by the way. So construction began in 1917, but stopped in 1918 at the height, or at a height of 175 feet due to building material rationing during World War I. But don't worry, guys. It resumed in 1922 and finished in 1924. And this stupid thing in 1924 money cost $200,000. So in 1917 is when they started on this. Not during the Civil War, not right after that, but during Jim Crow peak laws, which isn't great. But who's Jefferson Davis? Because we already talked about him. He has schools named after him. So who is he? Well, he was seen as the champion of a slave society, embodied the values of the planter class. That's an exact quote. And he was elected provisional Confederate president. So he was the president of the Confederacy. But here's the deal. He fell out of favor pretty quickly once he was the president because people thought he was weak. And they thought he was ineffective as their leader. So they got rid of him. But he has monuments. So why have a monument if you truly care about Confederate history? And if you're truly proud of it and aren't trying to just push some false narrative and revise your history and whatever, why are you putting monuments about someone that, if you know your history, you should be against, I guess? Because he was ousted as president. So that doesn't make sense other than just we know he was president. And because he was president of the Confederacy and we're wanting to put these symbols up there, we're going to do it. So it seems, doesn't seem great, guys. It kind of feels like you're making a blanket statement and using the Confederacy to push something else because posting something pretty ignorant. So moving on. So in North Carolina, there's the Confederate Soldiers Monument. Once again, the pedestal is still there, but once again, who cares? It's just a pedestal. So this was erected in 1924, not anywhere near the Civil War, in front of the old Durham County Courthouse in Durham, North Carolina. So, and it was dedicated in 1924. So once again, at the courthouse. Doesn't look great, guys. So then we have the Spirit of the Confederacy, and this is in Texas. This memorial was installed by the Robert E. Lee chapter of the United Daughters of the Confederacy. So the monument was put up at a time when Houston was a resegregated city. Once again, these coincidences are getting super uncanny, guys. So the city had enacted separate streetcar compartments for whites and blacks in 1903. And the following year, thousands of black voters were removed from the electorate when the city adopted a $2.50 poll tax. Jim Crow, man, they're keeping black people from being able to vote. And let's celebrate this by erecting something. So a 1911 history of the city. This is from the actual city. I'm not quoting someone who's some social justice warrior. I'm not quoting some liberal, some person who just wants to point fingers and call everything racist. I'm directing you towards what the city says. So this is what they say, and I quote that when it comes to this monument. So, quote, "Done much to preserve the memory of the Confederate soldiers who have passed over the river and to care for and comfort those who are still on this side." So once again, the whole point of this is to keep the Confederacy alive and keep those values alive. All right, moving on to the DeKalb. I only have a couple of these. Don't worry, I'm not going to do a bunch, but it's not looking good, guys. Just got to say that. The DeKalb County Confederate Monument is a Confederate memorial that formerly stood at Decatur, Georgia. So this was like a 30-foot stone monument. It was erected once again, hey ladies, by the United Daughters of the Confederacy, and it was near the old county courthouse in 1908, where it originally was. Once again, a courthouse by women and organizations that support the lost cause, which we all, please, please, please tell me that we all accept what they're about, because that was literally their mission statement. You can look all of this stuff up. I'm not just making stuff up. Anyway, so on the different faces of this, the different sides of this monument, there's different things written. The one I really want to focus on was on the west face, and it says, and I quote, "After 42 years, another generation bears witness to the future that these men were of a covenant-keeping race who held fast to the faith as it was given by the fathers of the Republic." So they're about the covenant-keeping race. So literally on the thing, it has race relations on the statue. Once again, not looking great. I love it. So they're acknowledging this was put up 42 years later. So how is this preserving history when it was done so much later? I mean, during when Jim Crow laws were being put into place in 1908. Yikes. Okay. One more, guys. So the George Davis Monument. It's a monument to an attorney and a Confederate politician named George Davis. That's why it's cleverly named that. It was in Wilmington, North Carolina. Now, this was erected by, oh my gosh, what a coincidence, the United Daughters of the Confederacy. This was put in 1911. For real, 46 years after the end of the Confederacy. After 46 years. Now, once again, Davis, he was a railroad attorney and minor local figure. Now, so here's why, once again, this is even the origins of this man right before the Confederate War is about race. This is racist. Like I said, we're not going to get into the Civil War, but damn, guys, like on March 2nd of 1861, he gave a speech in Wilmington where this monument is. This is why, this specifically is the reason why they chose Wilmington, North Carolina, because here in this city, he gave a speech saying the cause of secession should be to preserve chattel slavery in North Carolina. Here's his direct quote: "The division must be made on the line of slavery. The state must go with the South," end quote. The dude is literally saying, because we need to preserve slavery, we need to fight with the South. So all y'all who say that the Civil War wasn't about slavery, yeah, tell that to the people who wanted to fight the North and actually leave the country and make their own country. They want to leave the country. So, like, best case scenario, if you don't think this flag is about racism, this flag is about treason and it's very anti-American. So you can't really fly an American flag and a Confederate flag, even if you don't think it's racist because you don't know history and are confused by that, because it literally is you is a very anti-American flag. But I digress. So even conservatives agree that it's a symbol of racism. So following the shooting in Charleston in 2015, a lot of commentators were questioning the Confederate flag. And the governor of South Carolina, you know her, Nikki Haley, she called for a vote to remove it. And agreeing with this vote was Lindsey Graham, Mitch McConnell, Reince Priebus, who at the time was the RNC chairman, Scott Walker, and Rick Perry. So all these conservatives are agreeing that it's time for this flag to go. And on July 10th, the Confederate flag was removed. Like, obviously, they voted to get rid of it. I shouldn't say obviously, because there's plenty of Republicans against this, but it was pretty overwhelming and pretty bipartisan to remove the flag. And so it happened July 10th of 2015. And just taken out of the state grounds, and it was placed in storage, and it was put end up in a museum. So there we have it. So hopefully this gives both you liberals and conservatives the proper context of the Confederate flag and the monuments. And hopefully at this point, we can all acknowledge that this flag is specifically about racism. And these monuments were put up as racist symbols. I don't really know how you can argue against that. You can try. I would love to hear your argument. But the facts really speak for themselves, and the facts are kind of scary. So, but to the argument of preserving history and the argument that we should celebrate history. So the Confederacy was just for 4 years, right? We've talked about that. You're probably tired of me talking about that. So I was thinking, if we're going to have monuments to the Confederacy, what else? I mean, gay marriage was made federally legal June of 2015. That's older than 4 years. Can we put up some statues of, like, gay couple? How about we do that? I mean, just talking history, guys. What about, you know, Friends is coming on in a couple years. Is going to be 30 years old. It debuted in 1994, guys. Like, man, if we have 800 monuments for the Confederacy, why don't we have at least, I don't know, 200 for Friends? That'd be great. I mean, like, maybe one with Janice. We don't need to go too crazy. But hey, 30 years. I mean, we're just trying to celebrate our history of this country. Why not pickles? Pickles can last up to 5 years, even in an open container. Let's do some monuments about pickles, because they're part of this country, I guess. So all that I just said was stupid. I admit that. But I also feel it's stupid to know what we talked about here and still believe that those monuments need to stay up, that it has anything to do with celebrating our history or acknowledging our history. It's impossible to erase history that did not happen. And that's what's happening with these monuments, because they were put up decades after the war was over with ill intent. Even if you can't accept that the Civil War was on the basis of slavery, even if you can't accept that, it's hard for me to imagine, once all the facts are presented to you about when these monuments came up, when this flag was chosen and why, it's really hard for me to understand why you're still wanting these out there. I don't like throwing the racist card around. I think it tends to do more harm than good and tends to have people not really want to listen. But it gets really hard when facts are in front of people's faces and people still dig their heels in. So I guess I just hope this, you know, this is what, I think I talked for a little over 40 minutes. There's so much more to this, but obviously, I mean, I don't want to make you guys fall asleep, but also it's just a lot of information. And I think it's really important to know your history before you fight for it. I think maybe that's the moral I'm going with this. I think that's how I want to end this. And that's kind of the moral of the story, is know your history before you fight for it. All right, everybody. That was this week's episode of the Coffee Time Podcast with Noah Kinsey. So what did you think? Do you agree, disagree? Were there points I missed? Let me know what you think. In the show notes, there's links to all my social media accounts. Please comment, reply, message. I would love to hear your thoughts on this. And make sure to become a member of my Patreon. It's at www.patreon.com/Noah Kinsey. There's a lot of exclusive content. It's just a great place with a lot of fun perks and some fantastic discussion.